would like to acknowledge that the land which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewas of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and more recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous nations from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and the Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us have come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants, and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have their power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, a podcast focused on hospice palliative care. For the month of January, our discussion will be about leadership in palliative care, and my guest speaker today is Rachel LaPonce, who is the clinical manager at the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network. Thank you for joining me again, Rachel.
Thank you so much, Linda. It's nice to finish off the year having a chat with you.
Yeah, we do have some fun in our chats. And so I thought it would be very interesting for this podcast. As you know, I found an article. Actually, it's an editorial article entitled Exemplary Nursing Leadership is Central to Improving Care of the Dying. And this was written by Jane Phillips, Professor of Palliative Nursing, and Mira Agar, who is, again, a Professor of Palliative Medicine. And so they've taken a book that was written by two researchers in the leadership realm, and they've used this as a framework to do their editorial. So I thought maybe we could have a discussion using these two items. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that sounds great. And I'll just add in too. There is so much research on leadership in general in different organizations and leadership in palliative care. And, you know, there's informal and formal leadership. And I don't think that there's one formula that's best suited for each environment. And that's, you know, what you need to go by in order to achieve success. I think, you know, it's a matter of introducing a number of different frameworks, a number of different concepts to find what's going to work for you and what's going to work and achieve success with your team.
Exactly. The focus of the editorial article is formal leadership, but I wanted to ask you to come on to the podcast to actually bring that focus as well. So formal and the actual informal leadership, that will be a focus after, you know, I ask you the questions, if you could, you know, put that focus on it as well.
Sounds great.
Okay, so when I do review the article, it will be obviously their work on formal leadership. And when I talk about the five practices of exemplary leadership, then that is obviously the work of Jim Kosis and Barry Posner. So let's get started. And first, I'm going to do a summary of the editorial article. This article was written in 2016. When they talk about things here and some of the work they've done, it was obviously from 2016. The recent 76th World Health Assembly has called upon the global community to focus on strengthening palliative care. And as we know, even in Ontario, there has been a focus on improving palliative care. Transforming this vision into reality requires a commitment from policymakers, obviously, non-government organizations such as ours, clinicians and consumers to work collaboratively to address these known gaps. And in the editorial, they contend that the World Health Assembly vision for palliative care can be realized if all nurses, we would say, both in informal positions as well as formal leadership positions, apply these five practices of exemplary leadership, which is the leadership model used by Jim Kozis and Barry Posner. I'll just tell you a little bit about them. These two researchers have worked together for many, many years, since the 80s, I believe, and they have numerous editions of this book as they continue to do the research about effective leaders. And they've collected thousands of stories from ordinary people and the moments they recalled when asked to think of a peak leadership experience. And despite differences in culture, gender, age, and other variables, these personal best stories revealed similar patterns of behaviors. Jim Kozis and Barry Posner came up with a model, and this model displayed five core practices. And the core practices are entitled Model the Way, Inspire a Shared Division, Challenge the Process, Enable Others to Act, and Encourage the Heart. As we go through the questions today, I'm going to put them into those five categories. It is a common misconception that leadership is innately tied to a title. And as you already discussed, this is not absolutely true. Of course, we have formal leaders, but lots of change happens with informal leaders. Would you say, is your definition of formal leadership versus informal leadership?
Thanks, Linda. I do believe there's a distinct difference between the two. To me, formal leadership, you know, as per what you could find in a textbook, is someone who's public facing and represents the organization. They provide a level of vision and direction. And really, it's a focus on actions and the details associated with that action to carry out the broad vision of the organization. I feel leadership, though, is more than just this. It's more than good management. It's more than administrative abilities. Although these are very helpful assets, I also think it encompasses the ability to inspire and engage people in new endeavors and to effectively manage change. To me, informal leadership is someone who doesn't officially have a title or responsibilities and authority, but these individuals are those that are willing to step up and take action in their roles and take action beyond what their responsibilities are in the organization. They're visibly present and visibly available to their colleagues and to their associates and to stakeholders. And we have a great number of these within our organization that I just would like to mention. I believe informal leaders can be found throughout all levels of an organization, and informal leadership stems from strong relationships. It comes from influencing others and making connections with those that you're working with directly or indirectly. And it often requires personal courage. And many of the individuals in our organization have demonstrated such assets and such skills.
You and I have been nurses for quite a number of years, and we've had many different positions through the years. So personally, would you say that as you grew through your experience, that your thoughts on what an informal and formal leader, did that change?
I certainly do think it has changed. I think when I initially started nursing, I was not a leader at all. I was a follower. And as I transitioned into my career, gained some better understanding of what the main context of nursing was all about. It's more than just tasking. It's a holistic approach, especially in palliative care. And so I found over a great many years that any kind of leadership requires courage, commitment, and a determination to persevere. And so there's been so many changes, specifically in palliative care in Ontario. And as those changes occur, as nurses, we need to persevere and we need to be able to address those challenges and face them head on, to be able to modify, you know, how we perform our duties in such exceptional ways to make sure that patients have quality care. You know, that's leadership in itself, being flexible, adapting, and changing to circumstances, no matter how unexpected or unwelcomed those changes are. I feel nursing leaders must possess a variety of well-rounded characteristics, And I also believe there's a formula to transformational leadership, because that certainly helps empower others. The role of nurse leaders is to create more leaders and to lead by example, to create strong leadership for the future of healthcare. And in our role here at the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network, we're educators. And so that in itself puts us in an informal leadership position in which we need to demonstrate best practice. We need to speak the language that's appropriate to be using. We need to be able to demonstrate to the service providers that we're educating what is the way in which quality palliative care should be given. And we also need to be able to spark and influence creativity in the way that we provide that appropriate care.
Right. So while you were talking about that, I was thinking about one of the most often asked questions after, you know, we do a course and have a discussion. And one of those questions is, okay, now you've given us the tools, but how do we actually go about making the changes in our organization? So the question of how now do I implement these changes and take on informal leadership position? And I think that comes with experience as you start advocating for your patients and their families.
I agree for sure.
What do you feel are the qualities of both great formal and informal leaders in palliative care?
So I do think that initiating and establishing new palliative care services requires individuals that are charismatic in their leadership style, people who have a vision on how to make change and the ability to share their vision with others certainly have great success. And they often bring attention to themselves and people are interested in what they have to say. As palliative care has diversified and adapted to the different sociocultural context in which we currently live, it has embedded in it different types of leadership styles that are required. And these are the skills of both formal and informal leaders. I also think that possessing negotiation skills, learning to work with people from different backgrounds, and understanding the drivers and the barriers that lead people to action is definitely beneficial. However, leadership in palliative nursing is not defined or grounded by years of nursing practice. You already mentioned that you and I, Linda, have been nursing for quite a while. I don't think that in itself is the only influencer to a great leader. I believe that leadership in hospice extends beyond the roles of formal and informal leadership. And in my personal experience, I think nurses with higher levels of motivation lead in many areas outside of formal leadership positions and have many of these informal leadership roles. I think that leadership in palliative care involves leading others with a clear vision of palliative care initiatives. It involves motivating and inspiring formal and informal leaders, and it requires skills that drive change and create healthy work environments and create and embed a positive work culture, encouraging others to work collaboratively with each other. These leadership qualities to me may be held by many nurses at any levels, from the bedside to those that are nurse group leaders or organizational leaders, to nurses that are designated in leadership positions, directors, senior managers, et cetera. These nurse leaders have skills that allow them to focus on the broad view of nursing, and they also have the ability to respond to change proactively rather than reactively in anticipating the future landscape. And this is, to me, is so very important when we're dealing with palliative care. We definitely can't be reactive when we're providing a palliative approach to care.
So now I'd like to talk about the piece of the model that's about challenging the process. And in the editorial, they mentioned that the value of palliative care has been recognized by nurse leaders and that nurse leaders play a central role in helping the team move towards a model of care that ensures specialist palliative care services are reserved for those with the most complex care needs. So you've actually, you know, mentioned that in the previous answer to the question about what you thought the qualities were of both informal and formal leaders. and that these nurses are prepared to reach out to their nearest specialist palliative care team so that their patients have access to appropriate care and support. And that there are clinical champions, you know, in every organization that again could be either formal or informal leaders, and that it's very important that these informal leaders also help to make positive change for the care of our patients. And also that exemplary leaders actively search for opportunities to break down the silos to ensure that palliative patients move seamlessly from the community into either long-term care homes, other places in the community, hospices, etc. And addressing these access barriers requires nurses to think creatively and to challenge the status quo. And nurse leaders working both within and outside of specialist palliative care organizations recognize that the foundation for more sustainable palliative care models is mobilizing communities and helping to build social networks for the dying person. And these same nurses are instrumental in helping families navigate the bereavement period and to access the support they require. So according to Kosnes and Posner, leaders establish principles concerning the way people who could be constituents, peers, colleagues, and customers alike should be treated and the way they should pursue goals. Leaders create standards of excellence and set an example for others to follow. They put up signposts when people feel unsure where to go or how to get there. And leaders create opportunities for victory. What would you say are some of the barriers that face frontline palliative care nurses?
So there are many. I'll just mention a few that come to mind at the moment. I think the current medicalization of death and the positioning of palliative care as only an aspect of medical care rather than a social care and a general community response to dying. I think that it needs to be both and be able to be viewed as both and normalized and treated as such in order to be able to move forward and create change. I definitely think that sometimes the lack of encouragement from organizations or institutions for the training of leaders, both formal and informal, can be a barrier. Sometimes professional inexperience and a young age, and sometimes just personality traits such as our resistant sort of personality, resistant to leadership or resistance to change. There's definitely a formula for formal and informal leaders to address issues like that, because it's about instilling buy-in to the change so that individuals feel as though it's something worthwhile that they should be involved with. I also think the silos in care certainly create barriers. And as palliative providers, it's important for us to ensure that palliative patients move seamlessly from community into all organizations that they receive care in order to create change.
How would you see these barriers being challenged by informal leaders?
So I think, you know, it's definitely important to ensure that palliative patients move seamlessly from community into acute care or into long-term care homes or vice versa. You know, someone doesn't stay stagnant in one area and never move to another location. And it's important for us, especially when we're providing a palliative approach to care and we're talking goals of care, individuals need to move to these different locations in order to be able to address the things that are at hand. And they should be able to do this seamlessly. It's important for nurses to negotiate and these complex care pathways in order to provide improvement in the patient's access to this care. Nurses need to think creatively and to challenge the status quo to make sure that these barriers to access are being addressed. And that's not easy. And that requires both formal and informal leadership to advocate for patients.
And working collaboratively together to ensure that the barriers are brought down and patients and their family have access.
Absolutely. And I also think sometimes even the language you use, when we think about barriers, you know, we think of a negative context to it. And often we can, instead of using the word barrier, we can use the word opportunities.
Oh, that's a great thought. I love that. So you and I have worked together now for 3 years. I would say I'm in a, obviously in an informal leadership role, and you're in a formal leadership role. And we've talked about many things having to do with leadership, but for the audience, could you tell them how do you search out challenging opportunities for yourself and your staff to help change, grow, innovate, and improve?
So I think in my particular role, yes, I may have a label associated to my name, but I think my formula or the way that I approach my position is from the position of informal leadership. I believe that honesty and effective communication is essential and it needs to be open in order to allow staff to know what the expectations and what the goals, of the organization are that we're striving to achieve. I believe that commitment to others, including the staff, including our stakeholders, including family members, if we're front-facing them, and patients, allows us to know that a nurse leader is not solely in a leadership position to receive personal benefit, but in a place for those can be working together as a team. I believe that empathy for others is essential, and it's important to convey thoughts, feelings, ideas, concerns, fears, because it's necessary for the team to understand that to create cohesiveness. I believe that nurse leaders cannot be empathetic to others. They don't have that trait within themselves. I believe that one must strive to focus their attention to situations in order to be able to address problems and to be able to identify what the relevant priorities are of each situation. I think organizations allow opportunities to put plans into place that are well thought out and implemented so that the team can very easily follow them and know what the expectations are. Planning is a priority, communication is a priority. And I think maintaining responsibility for each of our own actions is also very important, knowing what our roles are in each of these tasks. Certainly improves the way that we can grow and innovate and improve the way we're doing things.
So, in the beginning of the answer of your question, you mentioned, yes, that you have the formal title, but you also would consider yourself as an informal leader. And I must say that that is why there is so much effect and why we all get along so well. And because you lead, but you also follow. And in informal relationships, there's always obviously that more kind of intimate relationship, which I would say that you also have with each of your staff members.
Well, thanks, Linda. I think sometimes probably the way that I became in a leadership role formally in this organization probably contributed to the way I continue to lead because I wasn't always in this position. I was earlier, in a position as the rest of the PPSMCs. And so, that was my comfort. And I became an informal leader within that role in which I played. And, through years of tenure, I just kind of, the title sort of was applied to me, when I moved forward and just had a different role in the organization. But the skills and the traits and the assets that I put towards that leadership, I think have remained the same.
Well, I always say that that is, for me, one of the biggest signs of a good leader, a great leader, is someone who can go back and forth between being an informal leader and a formal leader with the same people, because that just, I think, speaks volumes. Can you give us an example of when one of your staff came to you with an amazing idea and was the creator of something you implemented to change a process?
Sure. So when I thought about this question, when I was reading through the questions that you gave to me in advance, Linda, there are so many options to choose from. So I'll just talk about a simple change in practice and process that we implemented. I think it might have been a couple of years ago. It was when we were talking about how we can keep track of our supplies when we're presenting. So as you know, we're educators and we go to different locations, either independently or in groups of two or three, to facilitate education. And so we require a lot of supplies at times when we show up at these venues. And we were a little bit disorganized, to be honest. And so we had to create a way of allowing ourselves to be organized. So as a team, we brought this idea up in one of our team meetings, and we brainstormed ideas in which we could create some opportunity to put a process in place. So we were, instead of searching for projectors and screens and speakers that were required for presentations, we decided as a whole that we would put together two suitcases that contained all the things that we required for our face-to-face facilitation and education. And from this also came a shared calendar that we use to keep track of where each of those two suitcases are. There's a list inside the suitcase that talks about what supplies need to be in that suitcase at all times. And it also has a description as to how to set up the projector, because if you're not using it all the time, you sometimes forget the steps and the certain order in which it needs to be turned on, etc. So, you know, the group as a team brought up, you know, this issue that we needed to address, and we put a plan into place to address it, and it's working really great.
Right, because you one thinks, well, that sounds kind of, you know, foundational, but when you actually go and you don't have the proper equipment, or you can't find it, or it's not working, it's more than just foundational, because you can't do your job. So yes, that was a great idea.
And I think too, you know, we were originally a small group of just a few facilitators, and so everybody had their equipment at home. It wasn't an issue. Right. And now that we have seven PPSMCs who are here, there, and everywhere, you have to grow as your organization grows. And we're finding that, you know, we were grassroots at first, and now we have to have a certain processes and policies in place that are more organizational to ensure that everybody is on the same page. And we're learning that as we grow.
And can you give us an example of when you experimented with taking a risk and it went well, and also an example of one that didn't go so well?
Sure. If any of the clinical team or Hospice Aurelia are going to be listening to this later, they'll probably laugh, because last year our organization had two projects in the works that were nearing completion. And I thought it would be adventitious to submit an expression of interest to HPCO to share our work as a poster presentation or an oral paper. So I submitted three abstracts just on my own. Thought it would be, you know, great if at least one could be accepted, but we had all three accepted. So we had a huge influx of workload that we had to put together as a team in preparation for that.
Right. And it actually came off very well, and the work was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it was. It was. But not what we expected.
No, not quite what we expected. I still remember that moment when you told us all that you had submitted three and that all three got it accepted. And I think my jaw might have dropped for a minute.
I think everybody's did.
Risk.
Okay, so a risk. Let me see. So a risk that we took that did not fare as well, I think, was partnering with a local organization that was coordinating a health fair. It was to have a large volume of community service providers drop in at one location at a certain time. But the end result, the turnout was a little bit poor. In reflecting on this, we were able to kind of assess and evaluate some key areas of improvement that could have impacted the results more positively. So not all things end with the preferred outcome, but, you know, we learn and we can improve for the next one. So we definitely will partner with local organizations again and coordinate health fairs, but we'll use what we found in the first situation and make sure we have maybe more organization, more planning, more marketing, etc. Some of the things that could have improved the results, we'll make sure we have those in place for the next one.
Mm-hmm. And you always, you know, bring us together because most of us obviously don't work in the office, and we have regular team meetings and discussions about how we can improve on the next one.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to go on to the next part of the model, which is inspire a shared vision. And in the editorial, the authors say that exemplary nursing leadership within health administration, clinical education, and research underpins the promotion of safe, effective, and appropriate care for patients with palliative care needs. Access to specialist palliative care has been demonstrated to improve care, reduce health costs, and potentially increase survival. However, specialist palliative care is not routinely available to all dying patients, and this gap can be largely addressed through the implementation of a palliative approach, also referred to as primary palliative care. So a palliative approach is care that is delivered by the patient's usual care team to minimize suffering and distress. And according to Kosas and Posner, leaders passionately believe they can make a difference. They envision the future and create an ideal and unique image of what the organization can become. Through their magnetism and persuasion, leaders enlist others in their dreams. They breathe life into their visions and get people to see exciting possibilities for the future. So recently, our organization went through a visioning process for the next 5 years. Can you tell the audience how you and our executive director went about the process of envisioning and enlisting our staff?
Sure. So because we're a small organization, this year we just did it very informally. In the past, we've brought in, you know, a formal leader to coordinate and engage in the conversation. But we did it a little differently this year. So our organization planned strategic planning day. It's not often a workshop that many look forward to, but we tried to make it as exciting as possible to ensure brainstorming. So to do this, we brought all the staff together, and to avoid, you know, minor details and having the day drag on, we made sure that the staff were engaged already. They already had the details of what the day was going to be, and they knew what the priorities of the day were going to be, and we structured it like that. So in the beginning of the day, we introduced it. We had a summary of the mission, vision, values. We gathered a consensus and understanding from the group. Then we moved forward to the three broad overreaching priorities and discussed those and how they aligned with the goals of other guiding documents to ensure there was understanding again. And then we answered any questions that the staff might have had. We then broke out into two teams and groups of 4 to 5, not too many, to ensure that all had the opportunity to speak freely. And then there was one person from each group that scribed the feedback and the comments made by each of the different group members. And then the executive director and I collated the results, clustering the common themes to reach a consensus. And then we gave the draft summaries back to the staff to review, to make sure that what we collated was what they had intended in their meaning. And then truly, I think it was set up much like we would set up an experiment with participants and group interviews, really. And then we can't forget that we provided lunch, always a nice incentive for staff. We certainly achieve increased attendance with higher levels of engagement when the staff is fed.
Actually, that day was actually kind of fun, Rachel, compared to actually some of the other ones, not at this organization, but outside the organization. It was more, you and Whitney made it more of a personal, intimate sort of relationship day where we all felt that we actually had a say into, and we did, into what was going to be actually formulated.
Perfect.
How do you see an informal leader implementing a palliative approach to care?
So typically, I think informal leaders have a certain set of traits that help them earn their reputation as informal leaders to begin with. I think knowing these traits and focusing on them throughout their workday can increase the chances of being recognized for these traits over a period of time. And informal leaders are developed over time and recognized over time. It's not an instant thing. An informal leader implementing a palliative approach to care, I think, is demonstrated by four things. I think, first of all, you know, their giving nature. Informal leaders often offer assistance without ulterior motives. They recognize what an organization needs and complete the relevant tasks, even if they don't receive direct benefit or incentive for doing so. I think informal leaders have a deep understanding of the company. Informal leaders know the company's policies, their goals, culture, history, and the leaders. And having this knowledge allows them to share it with others. I believe that a strong informal leader has the ability to build relationships. So instead of only interacting with a small group of people, informal leaders get to know many people within the organization, internal and external, within their place of employment. They make friends and they build rapport with different people, which helps build trust and loyalty among their peers and helps them gain respect to be that leader that they are. And then number four, I think that informal leaders have a capacity to listen to others. They often listen to all viewpoints before making impactful decisions. This shows their peers that they care about everyone who the decision affects instead of just their own interests.
Well, I was just thinking as you were speaking about the capacity to listen to others. So informal leaders, definitely in their relationships, that's one of the traits that they seem to have. And sometimes with more formal leaders, that I find that's something that they need to acquire. And even myself, in my own background, I had a little chuckle about when you said, you know, you listen to all viewpoints, because I remember in one of my not so good experiences, not collecting all the viewpoints and rushing to make a decision, and it actually didn't turn out so well.
Yeah. Hindsight is 20/20, is it not?
Yes,
but,
exactly.
You know, but it goes back to what we discussed earlier. You know, there are situations that didn't go as we had planned, and they're not failures. You know, those are opportunities again to improve the process and improve the way we're doing things in the future.
Exactly.
And I think that's a good quality of an informal leader, is to be able to look at those things that have taken place instead of allowing them to freeze you or to divert you in an absolutely different direction. It's about acknowledging it, taking ownership of it, and moving forward.
Our role as an organization is to educate and help others envision a palliative approach to care. Do you see your role as a formal leader who creates a vision that enables other informal leaders of the team to commit to it?
Our role as an organization is to educate and help others envision a palliative approach to care. I do think honest and effective communication needs to be open to allow staff to know the expectations and the goals they are striving to achieve. I think commitment to others, including staff, family members, and patients, allows others to know that a nurse is a leader, not solely in a leadership position. I strive to be focus-oriented in situations, able to dissect problems and acquire a solution. I think it's very important to maintain, as I said earlier, responsibility for your own actions, attitudes, and the way you respond at all times.
What would you suggest informal palliative care leaders do to facilitate change? And I alluded to before that this is often a question that most of us get after we teach a course.
So I think nurses who advocate via their professional organizations to develop palliative approach standards that address clinical patient communication, they advance symptom management and advance care planning, are leaders in their own right. They work to ensure that these standards are reflected in their healthcare organizations, in the way they carry out their assessments, the way they carry out their care plans. And it's an integral element of reporting healthcare quality.
And obviously, to facilitate change, it doesn't
Absolutely.
Always happen quickly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
What would be an example of an informal palliative care nurse enabling others to act?
So, great question, Linda. I'll give you two examples that can be considered benefits of informal leadership. So, I think enhanced collaboration is one. And this is when informal leaders foster a sense of unity and collaboration within their teams, and it works very effectively. And I also think increased innovation. And this occurs when open communication is encouraged, and it enables creative thinking, and then it becomes something that encourages innovation. So the outcome of what is achieved triggers further innovation. I also believe in investing in palliative care and continuing professional development programs, professional development plans, education, workshops, bettering yourself are very effective ways to promote self-awareness and personal growth. It also allows us to the ability to look at the capabilities of each staff members, see where their strengths are in order to be able to use their strengths in appropriate situations.
So
I think in, sorry, Linda, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was having a little chuckle about that too, because I was thinking about Laura and myself and differences, even though we're partners, of how you manage that, because we're very different doing the same job. So I was just having a little chuckle there about thinking about that.
Well, exactly. And when you put yourself in these different situations and expose yourself to these new opportunities, you develop what your passions are, or you figure out what your passions are. You don't develop them. So, you know, you figure out what they are, and then you can hone in on some of those key skills to further, you know, develop them. In certain clinical situations, it's encouraged that nurses take advantage of existing learning initiatives and to be able to link their skills to certain opportunities, to initiate some self-directed opportunities in order to be able to make a positive impact. We're not all fabulous at the same things. And it's about knowing where people's fabulousness is and placing them in those situations and opportunities so that they're empowered with the success that they're going to achieve. It's win-win. The individual feels empowered and competent and effective, and the outcome for the organization is large as well.
Right, I totally agree. The next part of the model that we're going to talk about is modeling the way. And according to the editorial, they say that exemplary nurse leaders create more accessible, equitable, and sustainable models of palliative care by modeling the way, by clarifying their values, setting goals, and becoming an exemplar leader. By creating excellence, they demonstrate that equitable and best evidence-based palliative care is within reach for all. They seek opportunities to develop and strengthen palliative care policies at all levels to ensure that their patients and families have access to the best evidence-based care and most cost-effective care. What would you say your guiding principles and values are on modeling the way for others?
So I'll sum this up with two statements that I found. So a number of years ago, when I was reading the Nursing Standard magazine, there was a statement by Peter Drucker, and I'll just read what that statement is because I wrote it down. I thought it resonated with me. So he says that the leaders who work most effectively, it seems to me, never say I. And that's not because they have trained themselves not to say I. They don't think I. They think we. They think team. They understand their job to be to make the team function. They accept responsibility and don't sidestep it. But we gets the credit. This is what creates trust, what enables you to get the task done. And there was also something that I heard just this past weekend. It was on a documentary called The Miracle Morning. I suggest all of you watch it. It's on YouTube. The statement was, not all readers are leaders, but all leaders read. And so to me, I always say knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, power to be used for the good of all. And by reading about ourselves, reading about issues, reading about ways to improve process, policy, ourselves, makes all the difference. That creates growth. And so I'll go back to the statement again that I heard on The Miracle Morning, that documentary. Not all readers are leaders, but all leaders read.
So The Miracle Morning, is that a podcast, Rachel, or what is that?
There's a book as well as a documentary, and it's about a gentleman. His first name is Hal. His last name is Elrod, and he faced two significant life-altering events, and he had a mantra or a process that he started each day with that involved self-actualization, meditation, exercise, proper nutrition. He did a little ritual every day, every morning. And that gave him the strength to start each morning and to make each morning the beginning of a wonderful day. And so the documentary is about this activity or these activities that he does every morning that help him start his day off the right way. and it has a number of different individuals who have used the same formula to create positive change in their lives. So it's just an interesting documentary to watch. I watched it on the weekend. A friend of mine had recommended it, and I thought it was quite interesting.
Yeah, so we will post the, perhaps we can post the link for that, as well as we'll post the link for the book, and as well as the editorial article. What is something that you feel you modeled the way on and that you're especially proud of?
I think there's two things that I've modeled. So nurse leaders demonstrate passion and respect for the profession of nursing, the values of nursing, the knowledge of nursing achievement. And I think I do this through demonstrating strong commitment to caring, justice, honesty. I show respect and integrity to patients and clients and to the staff that I work with. I think acknowledging and promoting nurses and the role and their contribution to patient care, to organizational growth, and the improvement of a palliative approach to care in communities. I think articulating nursing issues with a strong voice is something that I model. Supporting the development of professional nursing knowledge, I advocate certainly for advanced education. And I also think too, you know, nurse leaders demonstrate, build, and promote collaborative relationships and teamwork. And so, you know, I model this through seeking and acknowledging input from the team. I recognize the legitimacy and the value and the skills of others. And I discuss how those skills can align with the goals of the organization to make sure that people are doing what they love to do and feeling good about what they're doing. And I think I give and receive help and ask for assistance when I need it. Sometimes it's more than others. And I think, you know, I try to evaluate the effectiveness of how we're all working together to make sure we're always trying to improve that.
And obviously, like I mentioned before, you have regular meetings with all of us together to discuss all of these things.
Absolutely. I think that's important, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I wish, unfortunately, in the virtual world we transitioned into, I think there's great value in meeting face to face. And so I always love when we can get together on a monthly basis, you know, and meet each other for a team building activity or even a face to face meeting. I just feel so much more empowered and as a cohesive group when I can
right,
see
more
everybody
connected
face-to-face
for sure
versus online.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
And now the last piece of the model, and that is encouraging the heart. And in the editorial, the authors say that exemplary nursing leaders at all levels of the healthcare system play a central role in inspiring others to provide competent and passionate palliative care. They readily recognize the contribution of others, celebrate victories, and applauding the use of values. They understand the importance of celebrating accomplishments, especially given the huge effort required to achieve great outcomes. So in essence, exemplary nursing leadership at all levels of the healthcare system underpins quality palliative care, helps reduce disparities, and improves palliative care outcomes for all. How do you make sure that staff know what is expected of them?
So I try to be as clear as possible when communicating what the expectations are. And if needed, I often over-explain, which I guess can be a benefit or a curse. But those who need the re-explaining or the explanation over again appreciate it. And those who got it the first time kind of roll their eyes, but that's okay. It addresses the need for everyone. I try and document and continuously reiterate to the team what the expectations are as pleasant reminders, we can say. I try to let the team members know that they can take the lead at times, you know, if people have great ideas. And I want them to be empowered to move things forward. If they have a passion for it and they demonstrate to us as a group that this is something of great interest to them, all the power to you. Keep us informed, but move it along. You know, and I try to define clear milestones for new projects to make sure that we're all staying on task and not, you know, venturing off, you know, or falling off the radar, that sort of thing. Make sure things are continuing to move forward. And we do obviously have to have some concrete timelines for that. So making sure everybody's aware of the details. And then remember to celebrate the successes as a team and acknowledge effort. even though the outcomes may be different than what we had expected, it's about acknowledging those little wins and looking at it through a lens of success always.
And how would you say that you recognize and acknowledge the contributions of others?
I think the central role of a leader in palliative care is inspiring others to provide competent and compassionate palliative care. I like to recognize the contributions of others. I like to celebrate victories, as I said, and acknowledge the use of values and proficient care. And I try and make sure that we're constantly bringing this forward and recognizing the skill set and the job well done by the staff. I think it's important to understand the importance of celebrating accomplishments and the huge effort that it requires to achieve these outcomes. And I do this personally to the staff, and I also do it as a group as a whole.
What would you say is the secret of success?
I think for me, or where I see my role, is to create opportunities for the staff to move things forward, to create new opportunities for learning for our service providers out in the community, and for the team to experience sustained progress, sustained growth, that forward movement. Or even if we have to be at the same level of status for a period of time and just continue what we're doing in the way that we're doing it, because slow and steady is success in itself.
What advice or coaching would you give to others who are learning to lead?
I think I would say seek opportunities to develop and strengthen your own. Look for opportunities locally, regionally, provincially, for opportunities. Always access best evidence, you know, read, look at best practice, look at current literature, look at guiding documents, and try to effectively navigate your way through the bureaucracy and the processes and policies that sometimes we're faced with. Don't let that impede your progress. So if you have a passion and a desire, you know, stay focused on that and move yourself forward towards that goal. And it's okay to take risks. It's okay to make mistakes and then turn those setbacks into learning opportunities and look for new ways of transforming your personal practice, because your personal practice, improving that is going to make a difference in the quality of care for those that we're providing a service to.
And then to sum up our podcast, I did ask you to think of a personal best case scenario that you have had. And I'd like to ask you some questions about that scenario. So in your scenario, can you describe the scenario and who was involved in the situation?
Sure. So I think I'd probably like to explain probably our long-term care project that we took on over the last couple of years. It's now come to completion, but we were asked by Ontario Health to roll out educational workshops for the long-term care homes in North Simcoe Muskoka. So that I think would be the scenario that I would probably explain.
Okay. So who was involved in the situation?
So all our staff were facilitators of this education, because in our North Simcoe Muskoka area, we have 5 subregions, and in each of the 5 subregions, we have long-term care homes, a number of them. And so our goal was to build capacity in those long-term care homes by educating the service providers that work in them.
So it was a project initiated by Ontario Health that involved all of North Simcoe Muskoka and all of our staff. And who motivated you to engage in this project?
So initially it was representative from Ontario Health who had rolled out a project similar to this in another area of Ontario. And they asked us if we would be able to roll out a similar project to tweak it to suit our individual needs, but to roll out something similar to it in our area. And so it was basically triggered or initiated by the request from them. And then we just embraced it and rolled with it and made it unique to North Simcoe Muskoka.
How did you challenge yourself and others?
So I definitely set short-term goals and long-term goals in order to be able to, you know, challenge ourselves. We needed to have a specific plan in place that included both short-term, long-term goals, and in order to be able to keep organized and keep moving it forward, because there were a lot of moving parts in this project.
What did you aspire to achieve from the project?
So we wanted to improve the competency of the service providers that were working in long-term care. So that included health service workers, PSWs, nurses, directors, people in leadership positions at these long-term care homes. We basically wanted to introduce them to the education around a palliative approach to care, the differences between end of life and palliative care and end of life and a palliative approach to care. We wanted them to have some tools in their toolbox, so to speak, of things that they could use to identify residents who would benefit from a palliative approach to care. And we also wanted to give them some tools that they could use on a daily basis that would improve their practice and the provision and the quality of that palliative approach to care that they're providing for their residents in long-term care. And we wanted to make sure that the staff felt comfortable with this knowledge, that their knowledge improved after being exposed to some of this education. And through that knowledge improvement and that turning theory into practice, that the quality of care for residents in any long-term care home in North Simcoe Muskoka would be improved as far as the palliative approach.
That was a significantly large project. So how did you build enthusiasm and excitement around the project?
So I think the enthusiasm and excitement came over time. And I think it was, it's evolved out of little wins, little successes. I think at first, I personally was quite overwhelmed as to, where do we begin? Because I was looking at the big picture versus just breaking it down into small pieces and just taking on each of those small pieces one at a time. So I think, I related it to the health services delivery framework, to guiding documents that we use that basically guide our practice and some of the competency frameworks, the OPCN competency frameworks that indicate to us what the basic competencies to providing primary care, palliative care for each different disciplines. I think when we can relate it to theory and relate it to tangible things that are guiding documents, it makes it real. It strengthens the value of it. It strengthens the specificity of it. But it makes it more relevant, specific, and legitimate. And the excitement, I think, came with the little successes. So as the PPSMCs rolled the project out in each of their different areas, moving it forward, I think, gave them great satisfaction. And so that enthusiasm, and then I would provide them with the opportunity to share what they've learned with others in our group meetings. And I think the final piece of it was when we were able to share our work with a broad audience when we had our poster presentation at HB, because it was such a large project, and it just validated the work and the effort that we put into it.
And throughout the project, how did you involve others and foster collaboration?
So I definitely had to set up meetings quite frequently. And in those meetings, I explained the tasks and I asked for engagement from the different staff.
And how do you build trust and respect?
I definitely try and create a supportive and inclusive environment. I do a lot of listening, and then I ask for feedback, and I listen to, the opinions of others to ensure that their voices are heard. Because if I'm not, I wasn't necessarily the one who was out in these long-term care homes rolling out this project. I was directing it or working with it from an organizational perspective and saying, this is what needs to be carried out. Please take it to the homes and roll it out. And so as the PPSMCs were rolling it out, they would come back to me and tell me, where some of the limitations were, where some of the successes were, how we could modify it, what the staff were saying could improve it, et cetera. And so we, the next, instill some of those changes to improve it.
Mm-hmm. And you may have already answered this, but how did you build the capacity to excel?
I think involving those, ensuring those involved knew what the expectations were. I had them shadow one another. If a new PPSMC was going to be rolling out the project, I had them shadow a nurse who had already rolled it out in their area so that they could, you know, be aware of some of the tips in moving it forward successfully were. You know, the unfortunate thing is the ones who rolled it out in the first few homes learned, you know, sometimes by hitting the wall or through experience, you know, what didn't work so well, but they were able to share that feedback with their colleagues to make sure that, you know, people didn't run into some of those same situations.
What principles and values guided you and the others on the team, and how did you set an example?
So I definitely tried to inspire a passion for the project. I definitely spoke to why it was a priority. And then I rewarded the small victories and I trusted the team. I was very transparent with what was going on at all stages of the project rollout. And I encouraged everybody to be self-aware and to not take on more than what they could. And if we had to extend out timelines because people were a little bit too busy, then we did that. You know, yes, we had some timelines that we were trying to keep, but things popped up that were unavoidable. And so we just went with it.
How would you say that you recognize individuals on your team?
So I definitely acknowledge the work and the efforts that the team puts forth. As I've said often today, I definitely acknowledge the successes in our team meetings. And I message nurses individually often about the work that they're doing. And I allow individuals the opportunity to highlight their work, opportunities such as HPCO and taking part in the poster presentations, the oral paper, leading certain topics at team meetings that are things in which they're most responsible for, sharing what's going on in their different areas, highlighting opportunities that they've been able to move forward. I think all of that encourages and celebrates success.
And to finalize this scenario, what lessons did you learn about leadership from this experience?
I think personally, what I've learned is take less time and listen more. Understand each position in the organization, encourage growth, take care of your team members, be a source of information, accept and respond to feedback, learn to adapt and be flexible, monitor my own personal health to avoid burnout, and monitor, you know, the health of the team itself to avoid burnout, to make sure that, you know, I'm not assigning things or overloading individuals to do those regular check-ins. To place an appropriate person in the correct position is very, very important. And to make sure to manage expectations for myself and expectations that the team has for the leadership team. And to be honest and transparent, and to learn from mistakes and move forward. And then I think, you know, specifically be persistent with what our goals are.
Thanks, Rachel. We've come to the end of our time together today. And I just want to say that I absolutely love this conversation. We've been able to take an editorial on exemplary nursing leadership that's central to improving care of the dying. We've taken a book on leadership that they used in the editorial and spoken about that. And then we've applied all of this framework to our own organization. And, you know, you've shared some tips and tricks and interesting stories from your own experience. So I want to say thank you very much for taking the time and sharing all of this with us today. And I think this is a very good that would be totally relatable to helping informal leaders take on the task of implementing a palliative approach to care and helping transform palliative care in, I'm going to say Ontario, but it could be anywhere. Yeah. So
thanks,
thank
Linda.
You so much
You're
for
welcome.
joining me today.
You're quite welcome.